Okay, let's get started. As we did at 4:30, just to make sure you're all paying attention, we're going to fire the cannon again. Hit it. There it is. Okay. It's official. Thanks again for all of you being here. One more shout out to the donors and the sponsors. I'd like to recognize to all the members of the legislature that are here, past and present. Thank you so much for being here. Your support over the years has made a difference, obviously, not just constructing this place, but keeping the funding going to make sure it stays the way it should be. Thank you all for being here. Just a moment on the funds that we're raising tonight. We'll finish off six videos that we'll have in the museum to sort of round out the Constitution exhibit. It tells a pretty unique story about some of Ohio's unknown history, and those will be unveiled in a couple of weeks. And we had the cooperation of all the former governors still around to be on these videos, so it really says something about their commitment to the place and the commitment to Ohio never really ends, and we're so grateful for that. So look forward to that in a couple of weeks. We're going to start off, we're going to have two videos, and then we're going to turn it over to the panel. I'll introduce the panel. But the first video, if we're ready, is from Governor Mike DeWine. Could not be here, so here's a welcome video from Governor DeWine.
Good evening. Fran and I are so very sorry that we're unable to be with all of you tonight for the 25th anniversary celebration of the restoration of our beautiful State House. The restoration effort that began in the late 80s to take the State House from a building complex that had certainly seen better days and was frankly looking very careworn back to its rightful place as the majestic seat of our state government and return back to its 1861 grandeur was truly a bipartisan and long-term project. When I was a young state senator, my office was in the Senate Annex. Anybody who remembers what that annex looks like would just have to shake their head. Keeping it looking great in the 25 years since that time has been a bipartisan long-term project as well. You'll hear tonight from different speakers, including former Governor Richard Celeste and former Ohio Senate President Richard Finan, who will talk about the tremendous effort it took to undertake a project of this magnitude. I want to thank both of them for their persistence and their determination to get the job done. As they both can tell you, there were a lot of doubters out there. Just take a moment tonight to look around you to see the magnificent results of this labor of love. Or come here sometime when you see the school buses lined up on 3rd or State Street. They're a sure sign that the State House is buzzing with the sounds of enthusiastic young visitors. I love talking to school groups, and I want our young Ohioans to see the state government in action and return home inspired by what they see and what they learn here. The State House has also become a place where weddings are celebrated and a place where Ohioans can gather to hear world-renowned historians, artists, and authors. The Ohio State House means so much to Fran and me. We not only had my swearing in as governor here in the rotunda, but also we had our inaugural ball a couple of hours later in the State House that evening. And we used every space available throughout this incredible building. It was truly one of the most memorable nights of our lives. Thanks to everyone here tonight for your love for our State House and for your work in keeping it a showplace of democracy for future Ohioans.
Thanks, and now we'd like to do show you a video that Dan Schellenbarger, Megan Wyckoff, and Richie Epson put together. It tells the story of the building of this place, its fall to disrepair, and its resurrection.
It was a hot day on July 4, 1839. For many weeks, various folks had been hard at work organizing this 10-acre plot of land in the middle of the newer city of Columbus, with several tables of food and gallons of grog for the celebration of the laying of the cornerstone for Ohio's State House. At that time, it was determined that the construction would be a 5-year process, costing no more than $450,000. Former governor, Jeremiah Morrow, was on hand to make the dedicatory speech where he extolled, "Let the foundation be deep and strong. Let the materials be of nature's most lasting gifts, durable, imperishable. Let the edifice rise in solemn, simple grandeur, a monument of chaste and classic beauty." Little did they know that the construction would stretch beyond 20 years and the cost would more than triple. But indeed, they were able to create a building that exhibits some of the finest architecture in our country and reflects the very essence of our democratic ideals in our republic. This grand Greek Revival edifice would not last long in its initial state. Originally, all of Ohio's government was housed in its noble rooms. It would soon be altered and altered again to accommodate the growth of the state. By the 1980s, the 53 original rooms had been carved up into 317 spaces. Grand rooms were cut into 2 floors. If you worked on a 2nd floor, you might be lucky enough to use the top of the boarded up window as a storage space. Some offices were so small, guests had to sit in doorways. The original colors had been covered up with paint. Some rooms had more than 20 different coats. The house chambers, its ceiling once abundant with different hues, was painted white, it was said, to help with lighting for TV cameras.
Sitting in your office and having a piece of the ceiling fall on your head, or when a hearing room would be closed because a pipe had broken, and well, those were the kinds of things that happened pretty regularly.
I had a fire chief who was very knowledgeable. He came up to see me, and he parked in the underground parking garage and walked over to my office, and he says, "I've got 65 code violations, and I haven't even gone from off of the hallway yet." I mean, it was a fire trap. It was a fire trap.
Despite all of the destructive renovations and alterations, visitors could still sense the magnificence below the many layers of paint and carved up great rooms.
There weren't any fierce battles about, no, we shouldn't do it. I think there was bipartisan support.
Fortunately, in the 1980s, there was a bipartisan group of leaders who began looking for ways to restore the Capitol Square. Governor Celeste, with his legislative counterpart Speaker Reif, Senate President Gilmore, and Senator Aronoff, along with leaders Michelle and Nixon, working with Bill Flaherty at DAS, and the state architect Carol Olshofsky, all began to envision a plan to save the buildings. Leader Michelle was pivotal in the 11th hour save of the Senate building from being subjected to a wrecking ball. Senate President Finan was instrumental in working to get the funds and engaging his relentlessness to finish the project. He, along with Governor Voinovich and Speaker Davidson, all saw to the completion of the project. It was these leaders who had the foresight to protect this priceless landmark. Led by the Columbus architecture firm Schooley Caldwell and managed by the newly created Capitol Square Review and Advisory Board, the State House would slowly regain its dignity. Winston Churchill stated that we shape our buildings and our buildings in turn shape us. The State House was never meant to be just a place for government. It was designed to be a temple to the grand American experiment, democracy. Government officials and visitors confined in its rooms the literal feeling of democracy. In order to recapture this original tent, research was needed to discover the original materials and colors of the State House. Bob Loversich and his team at Schooley Caldwell, along with historical consultants Jeff Darby and Nancy Ritchie, pored over thousands of articles and documents to help discover the original ways the building looked and how it was finished. A 1940s history paper written by the Yale historian Abbott Lowell Cummings when he was just a grad student at Ohio State was discovered that provided a wealth of information.
At the time it was conceived, and by the time the foundations had been built, it was the largest state capitol in the country, which I think is very interesting, Ohio being a very important early addition to the original 13 states, and they certainly were making a very powerful statement.
CSRAB Director Ron Keller and his team were able to track down original furniture and a few of the busts and artifacts that had been in the State House when it first opened. The busts of Lincoln and Governor Chase were returned to the State House by an anonymous donor who had acquired them in a 1970s DAS sale for the total price of $25. A Columbus resident showed up with a swatch of dirty old carpet that turned out to be the original carpet in the House chambers. The carpet had been stored for almost 100 years in an old chicken coop still in their backyard.
Another thing we found was a photograph, an early photograph of the governor's office. And shortly after that, we were going through the warehouse at the Ohio Historical Society and recognized a table that was sitting in their warehouse as the original governor's desk, and would not have made that connection without having found the photograph, without seeing the photograph from about the 1870 period.
Dozens of masonry workers were hired to restore the limestone and bricks throughout the building. Hundreds of construction workers climbed in and around the building for years, adding new mechanical systems, plumbing, and electrical systems. Construction ground to a halt for weeks when unaccounted for asbestos was discovered and had to be removed. Artisans were hired to recreate the wood carving and the decorative plasterwork, as well as hand paint the grain on all of the wooden doors and window surrounds, just as it had been done in the 1850s. Construction was stopped again after the electrical wire was put in place for a debate about how much of the newfangled internet wires should be included in the building, if any at all.
That's why in the State House project it's been so important as one of the goals to make sure that it's a 21st century building.
The Capitol Square Foundation was developed as part of the restoration to continue to protect Capitol Square. The foundation has been instrumental to raise funds for parts of the restoration, the grand opening week, and continue funding of the essential projects like the museum, monuments, and programming. Bill and Susan Loda, Stan Aronoff, and Charlie Moses all have played leading roles to raise money for critical statehouse projects like the paintings and furnishings. Many of the governor's portraits had been damaged from the years of sitting in unconditioned rooms and hallways. The foundation worked with Bob Evans and schoolchildren across Ohio to raise the funds for the Rotunda skylight. Dozens of period-appropriate furniture pieces were acquired. The museum continues to evolve and expand due to the success of the foundation, with a display of Ohio's Constitution as one of the crowning achievements. On July 5, 1996, 157 years and one day since the cornerstone was put in place, Speaker Joanne Davidson rapped the gavel on the dais in the House chambers to open the session for the grand reopening of the State House.
Today and over the next several days of gala events connected to the Capitol Square Revival Celebration, the focus of the public's attention will be on the building, on the State House, and on the tremendous job done in restoring these buildings to their historic glory. Yet as marvelous as this structure is today, and as much as I look forward to joining you in serving all Ohioans in these surroundings, let nobody misunderstand that it is what we achieve inside these walls that will serve as the true legacy of our efforts as the people's representatives.
This was the time where people could finally marvel at the restoration, while memories of the former buildings were still stuck in their heads. More than 20,000 visitors crowded in the newly restored State House during its opening week. The Capitol Square Foundation has worked closely with the building stewards, the workers of CSRAB, to ensure the efforts put in to restore these grand buildings would not be lost. In the 25 years since the restoration, it has been helmed by only three directors, Ron Keller, Bill Carlton, and current director Laura Botticletti. These three leaders have not only worked to protect the investment in Capitol Square, but also see that critical operations of the building continue to serve the needs of its inhabitants. Because this is a working building as well as a museum, there are constant needs for repair and continual updating. As Capitol Square is in its second century of existence, it still continues to evolve to match the needs of our 21st century government.
The building has also been a significant landmark, I would say, in American political history. Political leaders from Lincoln to contemporary presidents have been on this site. A good many political leaders received at least their hands-on training in government here or nearby in the state offices that surrounded the site. So in that sense, it is, as we sometimes have said, almost a cradle of political leadership for the nation.
At that time, the greatest of the American state houses, and to this day, is a focal point for the people of Ohio, and one which should serve as a continuing reminder of the importance of government in their lives.
I'm incredibly pleased and proud to see what has been accomplished. I mean, this is a state capital that really sings with history and pride for anyone from Ohio who spends time here.
In the old days, what was it, Mary had her cafeteria there. God only knows what was going on. But today it's beautiful. It's a wonderful place to visit. It's wonderful for our children.
If you walk through here in the quiet of the evening when the lights are on, it's a very, very special place. I hope the people of Ohio believe that this is a solid investment in what is the history and the tradition of the state of Ohio, because it's all in this building.
You know, when you go to work in the morning and you're in a dumpy, downtrodden looking place and your office is 3x5, there's not a lot of incentive to stay there very long. But I think when they come in and they see the beautiful offices that they have and their staff, and I think they're incentivized to do better work, is my opinion. And I think it's improved the quality of what the General Assembly is able to do.
Whether we are visitors or workers, each of us leaves our indelible mark in these structures. Maybe it's our shoes polishing and following in the worn grooves in the stairs, or it's in the echoes of our voices that linger in these arched rooms. When we take care of our buildings take care of us. The State House does more than just protect the inhabitants from the elements. It contains the history and the story of our state within its walls. The magnificent and challenging and complicated path this building has taken throughout history mirrors the magnificence, challenge, and complications of our democracy. We are the State House's keepers. It is up to us to continue to protect and foster these buildings as the representation of our love and our dedication to our great state, our great nation, and to our great democratic ideals.
Thanks again to Dan and Megan and Rich for putting that together. It was great. It's my pleasure now to introduce our next panel. I'll just go down the line here. Richard Celeste, a state representative, lieutenant governor, Ohio's 64th governor, ambassador to India, and former president of Colorado College. Richard Finan, state representative, state senator, President of the Senate, chair of the CSRAB for nearly two decades, and currently mayor of Evendale. How about it? Bob Loversidge, an architect with Schooley Caldwell. He's the architect of the Capitol and the head architect for the renovation project. Pete Cruz worked at the Smoot Company for 26 years, selected to be the construction manager on the State House restoration, and served as project executive from the beginning of the project to its completion. Brian Pereira is a longtime Senate aide who worked for a number of members, most notably for his work on the Budget and Finance Committee for nearly 20 years. Currently an Associate Vice President for State Relations for The Ohio State University. Brian is going to represent all the staff people that worked in this place over the last 30 years. And Mike Curtin will be our moderator, a 38 years with the Columbus Dispatch, first as a reporter, then an editor, an associate publisher, then became a state rep for 4 years, and is the author of the Ohio Politics Almanac. So when you're looking for a moderator, you hire the guy who wrote the almanac. Take it away.
Thank you, Charlie. I think you'd all agree with me that for many, many years now, no one has done more than Charlie Moses to preserve and promote the heritage of our State House. Thank you for the acknowledgement of his invaluable and tireless commitment, and that means, Charlie, you can never leave. So, we're going to go right down the line, Governor Celeste, starting with you. A mere 50 years ago, 1971, you're a newly minted state representative. 2 years before that, 1969, a legislative committee of the General Assembly had recommended demolition of that building. What was always called the old State House Annex. And for years afterwards, my old employer, the Columbus Dispatch, Thank you, John Walton Wolf, not John Frederick Wolf. Some of you understood John Walton's thundering from time to time. The Dispatch thundered editorially over and over for its demise. During your 2 decades at the State House, especially as governor, did you ever think the NX would see the wrecking ball?
No.
Why not?
I felt that it was a piece of the history of this State House grounds. I felt that it good bones. And my experience in business before I became a legislator was in the construction business. And I figured if we tore it down, the cost of replacing it would far exceed what we had. And so people wouldn't believe this about a liberal Democrat, but I was actually a penny pincher. And I thought that John W.'s idea was harebrained idea. It was just basically because he wanted to be able to look to an unobstructed view of the State House. And he hadn't endorsed me, so I didn't owe him anything. So.
No, he didn't endorse you, I don't believe. Senator Fining, one word, yes or no, was he a penny pincher?
Sometimes. But he was very instrumental in getting the State House off the ground.
As were you, of course, and you, a mere 48 years ago, 1973, are a new legislator here, and you said you were so disgusted, in your own words, by the, quote, deteriorating, filthy, and damaged, unquote, conditions of the State House that you vowed to yourself that if you ever had the power, you would use it to help lead a restoration. How long did it take before you sensed your vow might come to pass?
About 20 years. Well, I had a little office over in the Senate building down on the ground level. It had room for one chair and one desk and a couple of furry things that ran across my shoes at night. I worked in there at night, and I'd get up and I'd come in and I'd see these torchieres out here. And I'd look at those and I'd say, this place could be magnificent. It's got to be better than what we're doing here. And that's when I just said to myself, doggone it, if I ever get the power to make those changes. And then about 1985, 86, the stars came together. Governor Celeste came on board. Speaker Reif was on board. Fillmore was on board. And we got the situation off the ground. Senator Aronoff and I flew around to various state houses looking at their remodeling. And we went to one in Michigan where the senator says, look, you have to have somebody in charge of this position because you can't do it by committee. So we're flying back on the airplane and Aronoff turns to me and he says, Finan, you're it. I says, well, okay, what makes your decision? He says, well, you really care about the building. Secondly, there's going to be a lot of slings and arrows that are come from the press about the amount of money it's going to take to get done. And thirdly, you got a damn safe district to get reelected in.
And just as a quick postscript, did you share Governor Celeste's optimism that that building would never be torn down?
Yes, I did. Absolutely.
Bob Loversidge, chief architect of the restoration. Changes to our State House began as early as the 1880s, not long after the completion and occupation of the building. And the changes just kept coming and coming and coming. Is there any evidence anywhere along the way that anyone ever yelled, stop, we're ruining our State House?
I don't think they knew the word stop. Changes started happening in a logical fashion, I suppose, when the Supreme Court, for instance, moved from the State House into the annex. It was built as a judiciary annex. They needed more space. But the space that they occupied then was this big two-story space, and somebody said, hey, there's room here. Let's make use of it. So they built a floor across, and now it was a 2 one-story spaces. And the only good that came out of that, I think, is that the state established a relic room in which they deposited a lot of Civil War artifacts and other sort of miscellaneous old stuff. And that became the beginning of what became the Ohio Historical Society and the Ohio History Connection. So some of those changes, you know, made some sense. In 1930, when the State Department's building, where the Supreme Court is now, was built, the State Library moved from a magnificent two-story space that was shown in the video just now. And that fabulous room was disassembled piece by piece by piece. There's nothing left. And they built a stairway across, or a floor across, rather, and put offices in there. But that wasn't the problem. The real problem was later when the legislature started having more staff and they started doing more constituent work, and they needed a place to do that. Prior to that, they were part-time. They worked at their desk in the chamber. That was their office. And maybe the bar across the street. But at that point, somebody decided every legislator should have an office. Well, now you've got 130-some people needing an office, and where are you going to do it? And they did it by chopping and chopping and chopping and chopping the spaces up.
And a quick postscript question to you along the same lines. You were among almost all Central Ohioans who woke up one morning to find that the old Union Station had been demolished, and you were already into historic preservation, but that really sped up your devotion to historic preservation. When I saw Jeff Darby and Nancy Retchie here earlier, I'm reminded of that, of course, and that's really what got historic preservation up to speed in this town. Did you ever think that that building might come down?
Well, I think in years prior, when I would read those editorials from your paper, I was concerned. By the time we got on board, I think the decision had been made. Senator Michelle and Aronoff and others had decided they were going to put the Senate over there.
Yep.
And that's a good idea. But then they said, well, we'll allocate $10 million to do that. Well, that wasn't going to work. And Carol Olszewski, who was the state architect at that time, was instrumental, I think, in convincing the legislature that we ought to really step back and look at this mess and do a master plan. Let's look at the whole site. Let's figure out what we need to do here. Mm-hmm. And we were lucky enough to get that commission and work with the master plan, present it to Governor Celeste, present it to the leadership of the General Assembly. And that's when the idea of maybe we should go back to having one of the best capitals in the country. That's when that began.
Pete Cruz, project executive who supervised all the work of the restoration, the hundreds of craftsmen and women who were here doing all of that hard work. You were charged with that dissection of 317 rooms and returning the State House not only to its original 53 rooms, but also to its original grandeur. Help us understand the enormity of that challenge.
Wow.
In 5 minutes or less.
Three.
Three. First of all, I would like to say, Mike, one of the things that I remember distinctly before I ever met you was these two gentlemen and Lewis R. Smoot Sr. saying to me, you know, your trailer's right across the street from the Dispatch. So remember that.
I wrote news stories, not editorials.
But I know.
But, at that time.
To simplify it, it was basically 8-bid packages, if I remember correctly, Bob. We started with the parking garages and the site work, and then we came to the Senate building, and then the next bid package was the annex or the atrium here, as you see, and then we had 8 bid packages in the State House. The number one direction was you will maintain the openness, the building being opened the entire time. And I can't begin to tell all of you, we nicknamed Senator Finan the godfather of this project. He was the godfather. And if I had a dollar for every time someone came to me and said, well, Senator Finan said we could do that, and I would say to them, as you all recall, we didn't have cell phones back then.
Right.
I would say, well, come on in my trailer over here. We'll give Senator Finan a call. And it was amazing how quickly their stories would change.
So, we're going to get into some godfather stories here in a little bit. Brian, you're the youngster on this platform, a top staff member in the Senate for the Senate majority for nearly a quarter of a century. Did the State House restoration, in your view, have any noticeable effect on relationships among legislators and the staff and on the legislative process itself, to Senator Finan's point?
It did, and I think one of the things that people need to remember, you know, as a youngster who came in 1989, 1990, I was thrilled to be walking into a building where the carpeting was held down by tape. I didn't know it was bad. I was just happy to be going to work at the State House because it was such an honor. But as this started, and we all started to move around, people forget about this, the Senate caucus staff was in the Rife Center on the 22nd floor where the Department of Commerce is now from 1992 to 1996. As you were decompartmentalizing the building, we had to move things around because it had to stay open. And Godfather Finan, and I think there was another word people occasionally threw in there after God. But, you know, as people were moving around, we were forced to work together in a way that we maybe hadn't been when this place was so compartmentalized. And part of it, as we were working together, was realizing we all want to be here when this gets done. And knowing that, you know, this was pre-term limits, remember. So the members had a chance to be here, you know, and extend their terms. The staffers thought, this is really important. We're here when a switch is going to be flipped, and this place is going to become a show place. And, you know, one of the things that I also would point out is, as a staff person who had to run around this place, it was a fire trap. I mean, that's not an exaggeration. There was asbestos. It was very difficult for people who had mobility issues to get around. In fact, there were offices where we would say, Senator, Representative, you have to come down and meet with this group because he or she can't get to your office.
Yeah.
It was hugely important that this get done, not just for members and staff, but for the public.
Governor Celeste, back to you. You're in the governor's office. You knew this would be a massive, massive undertaking. It would take most of a decade to complete. It likely would cost more, perhaps far more than projected, and it would completely disrupt Capitol Square for all those years. Help us understand the dynamics of getting to an ultimate decision to move forward and where the most troublesome pressure points were along the way.
Well, I understand. I had the same incentive that Dick Finan had. I mean, I started off in the legislature in 1970. And, you know, you couldn't have a meeting with a constituent because you couldn't give them coherent directions to your office. You know, people could get lost for an hour trying to find a hearing room that they were coming to a hearing. So there was, to me, this was a very important project. Bill Flaherty came to me with Carol Olszewski, said that we've been thinking about this. We think there's some legislative interest in this. Senator Aronoff, Senator Finan have expressed an interest in this. And we'd like to try to move it forward. And it made very good sense to me. We had built what is now the Rife Center. That was a project that was undertaken shortly after I took office in my first term. That was complete, and that gave us some space, really, to consider prospect that we would be dislocating people in order to accomplish what was done here. And any big capital project, you put a number on it because that's the number that the best estimates can come up with. And you know if it's a serious capital project that you're probably going to be over by maybe 50% if you're lucky. If you got somebody really tough like Finan and keeping an eye on everything, right? I was pleased to hear that, you know, when this was originally built, it took 20 years and they were three times over the budget. Yeah. We did it in a lot
we were better.
Less than 20 years and for only two times what the budget was. So I would say, you know, all the capital projects I've been involved in now, Benton College campus and the rest, that was pretty damn good.
Senator Finan, Pete Cruz just a few moments ago described you as the godfather of this whole project, that when political and practical obstacles would arise, the godfather would be called and he would be beseeched to work some magic to make those obstacles disappear. Now that the relevant statutes of limitations have expired, can you give us an example or two of where the bodies are buried?
One of the first I can think of was the parking situation.
Oh.
You had to, a lot of people parked out on the east side of the State House. And so we drew up a set of plans that showed a diminution of the parking spaces, and some legislators were going to have to go underground. Well, that caused a first stir. Then came the second set of plans, which showed only leadership would have parking spaces above ground in there. And then there was more consternation. Then we had a third set of plans, and I remember Senator Hobson walked into his office one day, and he's got these plans laid out. Finan, I don't see any parking on the State House grounds. I said, really? I don't know where it went. That was the end of it. Another one was the limestone that was necessary for this atrium connection. And they looked all over Columbus and finally found it someplace out on Frank Road, I think. They came to me and they said, the guy won't let us in to the look at the limestone, even talk about it. Well, let me make a call. So I called him. I talked to him. Well, he let me know. Came back second, called him again. Well, look, I'll sell it to you. Sell it to you. Well, okay, we talked a little more to him. The third time I called, he says, okay, just take it. Get rid of it. It's free.
He wasn't into thoroughbred horse racing or anything.
No, 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 no. Not that I know of.
Speaking of parking, we all relate to that. I only served 4 years in the House, and people always ask me, do you miss the place? And my constant response is, I sure miss my parking space. And so I...
Well, every senator wanted to have the parking space right next to their office.
Right.
And Senator Zimmer's even told us that there was a tax implication to moving the parking to the underground garage. I never could figure that one out.
Bob Leversage, you have visited state houses across this nation. You've worked on several. You've described the Ohio State House as having qualities that are, quote, timeless and rare. Which qualities should we teach our children and grandchildren are the most timeless and rare about this place?
Well, several people have talked about the work that goes on here as being the most important, and of course, I agree with that. But as far as the architecture is concerned, our State House is unique. It was one of the first buildings that was purpose-built to be a state capitol. Some of the East Coast states have older buildings that were colonial capitals first or whatever, but think about what I think is timeless is the vision that the people of Ohio had to build this building. Think about Columbus in 1838 when they had the competition to design this. It was a little two-story brick building on the corner that was the state capitol that built in 1816. It was an office building that was in the video you saw along High Street that where all the state office holders worked. They called it Rat Row. Not sure whether that was furry creatures in the basement or a reference to the office holders, but the rest of the square was pasture land, and the buildings around Capitol Square were two stories, maybe three stories. A few of them were brick. Two of the streets weren't even cleared of stumps. And yet this giant building started to rise up behind a fence. The fence was to keep the prisoners in that were doing the masonry work. And this building was, at the time it was completed, about the same size as the National Capitol in Washington. Before the big wings were added, before the cast iron dome was added in Washington, our building was about the same size. Ohio was going someplace, and they had that vision at the very earliest time. And I think that's its lasting legacy, because now it holds its own in a city of 40-story buildings, in the biggest city in Columbus. But the architecture and the simplicity of it, the Greek Revival style that President Washington and Jefferson decided should be the style for public buildings at the beginning of the Republic, is better demonstrated here than any building in the country.
Pete Cruz,
you and all of the construction workers you supervised were required to abide by many, many strict historical standards in the demolition and in the reconstruction of the interior of these buildings. Of all those, which were the most challenging?
All of them were very, very challenging. But I will say there were a couple of things that come to light with that question. The Senate building was a huge concern. You talk about tearing it down. We were very concerned about a potential fire in there because it's actually a wooden structure. And on top of that, we had to keep that building heated, air conditioned, and humidity controlled during the entire construction process, which was a very big challenge, a very big challenge. That comes to mind. One of the other more challenging things were, I'll never forget the day they walked over and set a set of drawings down in front of my desk and said, you'll all remember, at least the older folks will, when they redid High Street. They said, you got 100 days to build a tunnel from the parking garage to the Vern Reif Tower. And I looked at them and I said, what? And we did it. We built that tunnel across the street.
But we not only did that, but we saved $1 million.
That's right.
Because the city was rebuilding the street, and right. We could dig a hole, put the tunnel in it, instead of having to tunnel underneath a busy street.
Yep.
Brian Pereira, can you offer a perspective on the effect that the renovation has had on civics education here and on the thousands of school children who come to the State House every year, and before and after?
Absolutely, and you know, it was mentioned in the earlier panel, when, and as well as Governor DeWine's comments, that you see school buses lined up out there, and what happens through the Capitol Square Foundation that all of you are generously supporting tonight and may want to give even more money to. You know, one of the things that happens is school groups come in here from all over the state, and you know, youngsters who are in elementary school through secondary get to take a look at what's going on in state government, and a lot of them get their first interest in civics and what goes on in the public sector from this visit, because they get to see the grandeur that is this building. The other thing that is going on that's probably, you know, many people in this room probably know about is through the Cap Square Foundation, there is an iCivics website that helps teachers do lesson plans for mostly elementary, but also high school students that help them set curriculum for Ohio-based civics activities. And you know, from my own perspective, having two kids, we can use more civics education in the state at this point. So the fact that this entire the fact that this entire edifice, as it's been reconstructed, is helping people realize how desperately important the public sector is and how the decisions that get made in this building every day affect all of us, hugely important. And it's because of the folks sitting here that got this done. I do want to throw a little fiscal jab at Senator Finan at one point, because when I was the budget guy here in the Senate, when the punch list was getting done, as you folks talk about punch lists, the total for this wasn't really $120 million, it was about $128 million. And you made me go deal with the last little fix-up at Controlling
Yes, we did.
Board. And one of you press people came up to me and said, you know, Mr. Pereira, your people are spending a lot of money. And I said, well, $128 million every 140 years, that seems like a pretty good price to me. And defending the empire.
Brian, we're going to stay with you for a moment. You were here in a top staff position at the time the demolition and the reconstruction was going on. And at the same time, we were experiencing in this city and state and nation, and the world for that matter, a technology revolution that was touched on earlier by our journalist panel, what things were like back then when somebody came in with a Jerry Seinfeld type phone for the first time into the House chambers. How did the technology revolution affect the staff at the same time that this building was being torn down and reconstructed?
And people, you know, think that this is something, you know, from like the I Love Lucy show or something, but when I started as a staffer here, every secretary's desk had a typewriter on it. Some of them were lucky enough to have a Selectric 3 that had a little bit of memory in it, but mostly it was just a typewriter. We had banks of payphones so people could run downstairs and make calls, and everybody had a landline. And you know, I, as a student in college, had a Greater Columbus Freenet email address in 1989. This building didn't have email till 1994. So we went from having no cell phones, a couple of people had pagers, but very few, and typewriters in a steno pool, to within 5 years having desktop computers that served as, you know, sort of high-tech printing devices. They weren't connected to the internet, to having the internet. And I'll tell you how desperately dodgy the system was when it got set up. I give these guys a ton of credit for thinking, we need to wire this for the internet, we need to wire this for cameras and radio, because we weren't planning on broadcasting anything that went on here when that first came up, but now we can, and thank goodness we can. I had, when we were working in the Rife Center as Senate staff, we had to log into our computers with our last name dash Rife and email things to this building with our last name dash Statehouse, because we couldn't log into the same account in the same building. So we went from typewriters and ribbons and U.S. Postal Service to the internet in the period of time that this building switched over. And as a staff member who was a page back in the day, and by the way, this is the original tie that I wore when Dick Finan and Stan Aronoff said we have to have page uniforms. So I'm sorry to everybody that has to wear this tie. But when we were staffers and somebody said to me, like Senator Finan, make sure every office in the Senate gets a copy of this, that meant I had to run around through the catacombs and get a flim sheet or the stat sheet or that day's clips on paper to everybody in this building, and that took a hell of a long time. And all of a sudden, I could email it. It was like manna from heaven.
Governor Celeste, we've all witnessed how profoundly our political landscape has changed since you left the governor's office at the end of 1990.
Those two things are not directly related.
One of the seismic shifts among many that we experienced was the approval of 8-year legislative term limits in 1992. If our state house today was still in the sorry condition that it was when you were governor and at the inception of that restoration project, would such a massive and costly project be politically possible?
Well, I think it would be extremely possible today. I mean, when I reflect on the opportunity and the blessing I had to serve as governor, it was interesting. I mean, for 6 years, the Republican controlled the Senate and the Democrats controlled the House. I was a better Senate, as a better governor in that setting than I was in the first 2 years when the Democrats controlled everything, because I had to work with everybody. And I think it's also a tribute to the leadership, people like Paul Gilmore and Stan Aronoff, Vern Rife, Corwin Nixon. They, you know, the goal was to get things done, and there would be disagreements, and sometimes we couldn't manage to come to a conclusion, but by and large, you sat down with folks and reached an agreement. And I think term limits have been a part of making that more difficult. I think gerrymandering has made that more difficult. I think that the cost of running and the influence of money, all of that has made it more difficult today. So I'm not sure that it would be as easy. I watch Governor DeWine struggle with some of his own party trying to get things done today. And I don't know whether we could do it. I'm glad we did it when we could, you know? And sometimes you wonder, the time is right, okay? We needed an office building for the Senate and for the House members in a way that would allow them to do their business. Once, as you point out, once we started to have staff grow, legislatures in session more often, public exposure is higher, public interest is higher, and public engagement is more important. So, and, you know, it was the right time for it.
Senator Finan, a variation on the same question. As Governor Celeste noted, we had a Democratic House, Republican Senate, a Democratic governor, different politics back in the day. Could you be an effective godfather today to do something like this on that scale we did back then under current conditions?
Well, I think, first of all, you had to have a good relationship with Vern Rife and with Stan Aronoff and Senator Gilmore. I remember a time when we were in, I think, our second or third tranche of money that we were looking for. And Voinovich was the governor at that time. And so we all went over to Vern Reif's office, his big conference room over there. And the DAS is all spread around, and they got their PowerPoints and their boards and everything set up. And Reif was a little late, as usual, and waiting for him to come in. And he walks in the room, and he doesn't even sit down. And he looks at me, and he said, "Senator, do we need this money to do the job?" I said, "Yes, Mr. Speaker, we do. That's all I need to know," and he walked out of the room. And that, I think those are the kind of relationships that you had to establish long before. I thought I got along very well with the Speaker in the times that I was here. I got along very well with the governor. So I think it would depend upon the relationships that you could establish, and maybe those times are different now.
Bob Leversage, 25 years now into this phase of its life, looking forward, what do you see as the primary challenges for the future of our State House complex and Capitol Square?
Well, I think as long as the Capitol Square Review and Advisory Board is the landlord of the space and has the authority that they were given at the beginning of the project, as long as they stay bipartisan, that we have a good kind of envelope of protection. But I think it's really important that legislators, as they come on board generation after generation, understand what this building is and why it is and how it got to be the way it is and where it came from, where, you know, what we went through to make this happen. Yeah. I don't know to what degree that happens with term limits.
We're going to go the old-fashioned way.
I think you're good.
Oh, I'm good.
Thank you.
Bob?
How about now? Okay. So the Capitol Square Board is charged by statute to maintain this building and to make changes to it as necessary within federal standards on historic preservation. And so I think it's really important that we as citizens, that the legislators, that the Capitol Square Board people understand that. And what's happened here, you know, we spent $128 million. That's a lot of money. But if we did it today, it would probably be $400 million.
Yeah.
And it would take longer. So protect the investment is really what we have to do. And the Capitol Square Board has done a fabulous job of that for 25 years. I mean, it looks better today than it did when we opened it because it has a little bit of age, a little bit of patina. It looks like it's lived in. And when we opened it, it looked a little bit like a stage set, you know, because everything was new. But I think that that's what we need. We need to keep teaching generations of legislators, generations of maintenance people, generations of staff people to appreciate this place.
Let's stay with you for a moment, Bob. The architectural legend, Frank Lloyd Wright, called the Ohio State House, quote, the most honest of all American state houses. Mm-hmm. What did he mean, and was he correct?
So I'm wearing a Frank Lloyd Wright tie for that reason tonight. He visited Columbus, and Frank Lloyd Wright wasn't much on issuing compliments to other people's work ever. But he did make that statement, and I think it's because of the bold simplicity of this building. You know, a lot of the state houses built later are much more elaborate. They're much more opulent. They're much fancier, much richer in finishes. This building is an honest expression of the early republic, and I think that's what he was referring to.
Pete, a few moments ago you told us that perhaps the annex was the most challenging part of the renovation because of its original plaster and wood construction. Was it in the annex where you ran into things you didn't anticipate, or in the State House itself, or both? And give us an example or two of running into things you just couldn't have anticipated.
All of the above, to be honest with you. Asbestos was, and lead paint was about that time really becoming a huge issue. So we had a lot of lead paint that we had to deal with and a lot of asbestos all across, including the flooring materials, et cetera. So I would say that the that would have been the biggest challenge that we ran into during construction was opening up something and finding something hazardous, either behind what we opened up or in the area of what we opened up.
And sticking with you for another moment, of all the hundreds of craftspeople who worked in here, what would you say was the most exquisitely delicate part, requiring the highest form of craftsmanship of everything that went into this place?
That is a tough, tough question. Yeah. Couldn't you ask Bob that question?
Oh, I would say I was in here one day and I saw them applying the gold leaf.
Yes.
Delicately to the places in the Senate building. And you had to be a man to do this because they would rub the side of their face with the brush to get the electricity built up, and then they'd stab it on the gold leaf and then stab it up onto the top. I was just befuddled by this gentleman and what they were doing, and that to me was a typical example of the level of craftsmanship.
And you know, Senator, in addition to that, the painters who did the artwork, it was just fascinating. We had a, Bob can help me here, we had a lady who was an expert, I think she was out of New York, and if I remember correctly, her
name
was Darla. And we always made a bet, even back then, and she knew it, that we were doing it. We would make a bet what color her hair would be when she would show up at the job site.
On her Harley.
On her Harley, that's true. But it was absolutely fascinating to watch in the Senate atrium where they took and peeled the layers of paint off. And one of the things that the architects and she was concerned about is they added paint, or they, how do you say it? They refinished those over the years, and they were concerned that they didn't do it right. Well, what we found out is we built a scaffold right up to the roof, and the guys would lay on their backs, and they would just, they would be up there laying on their backs, just taking the old paint off and then refinishing it. And as quiet as it's been, I think you will correct me on this, the original paintings in the Senate, in the annex, were bare-breasted ladies at the top, and they had to paint clothing back on them.
They weren't quite bare-breasted, yeah. But they did get their bodices adjusted over time.
A question for Senator Finan, and then one for Governor Celeste, and then a closeout question for all five of you. Senator Finan, with 25 years of hindsight now, which aspects of the renovation are you most proud of, and which aspects do you think are the most meaningful to the people of Ohio?
Well, I think the renovation of the two legislative chambers were very important to the state of Ohio. I think that's where a lot of people come and they congregate there and come for a session. And I just think the renovation that was done, I mean, in the Senate, for example, those big light fixtures are on electric drops so that they can come down and have the bulbs changed. Those things are just priceless, I think. And I think the two chambers, the third thing I would say is this magnificent space here. We almost lost it because the federal government came in and said, well, you're no longer going to be called a historic, or no longer have a historic designation. And I disputed that tremendously. And as you can see, you've got the little glass panels over there. Which were the reason those were put in was at the request to retain our historic status in the building. So I think in the uses of this place are just beyond the imagination of what we even thought of.
Governor Celeste, given the level of our current partisan divisions, what level of confidence do you have in the future of public investments needed to properly care for this jewel?
I think the building commands its support. People who come to work here as legislators are welcomed by the building and sustained by the building. And I would be astonished if, regardless of partisan swings or the way politics goes, if thoughtful leadership, particularly thoughtful leadership from the Capitol Square Advisory Committee, doesn't sustain support for this place.
We began our discussion starting with you and going that way. So Brian, we'll end it starting with you and let the governor
get
clean up. So in the video, in the second video that we saw, Governor Celeste remarked that this building sings with history. This panel discussion is being video recorded for history. In just a few words, would each of you, for all those who will come after us, convey a parting message that you hope will stand the test of time?
Well, afterwards, talk to me about what I would say if I wasn't being recorded, but I do think the most exquisite product of this building isn't just the facility, it's the legislation and the changes to the laws and the Constitution that are made by the people we elect. So keep lawmaking being a strong part of our state going forward, and the people will be well served.
Pete?
I'm just humbled to have had the opportunity to work on this project. It amazes me every time I come by it, drive by it, come into it, and I just hope that it is maintained for years and years and years to come. And I agree with the governor wholeheartedly. It commands people to take care of it.
Bob.
You know, we had a huge and very talented design team of architects and engineers and historians and artists and all of the people it took to put this together. And during the time that we were doing that, we constantly challenged each other to try to make 100-year decisions, to do as much of the project in such a way that we felt that it could be maintained for 100 years. Now, I know the mechanical systems don't last 100 years, but the pathways that we put in for air conditioning, for instance, are embedded in 5-foot-thick walls. The equipment that was put in a place where you can get to it and replace it. We're actually replacing some of the major equipment right now because some of it's 30 years old. But the thing we kept talking to each other about to understand is, and this might upset some of the people who thought they were our clients at the time, but we kept saying the most important constituents for this project haven't been born yet. And we need to make sure we're leaving something that we can be proud of, that they can be proud of, that their grandchildren can be proud of. And I think we've left behind a framework for that.
Senator Finan.
When I had my swan song as president of the Senate, a lot of reporters asked me, and I was primary on the legislation of 81 different bills that were passed, including one that Governor Rhodes vetoed. But a lot of the reporters came to me and said, now what's the biggest bill you ever have passed? And I did a lot of budgets and things like that. And I said, not the bills. It was the restoration of the State House that to me was the biggest thing that I was able to do in my legislative career.
Governor Celeste.
This place doesn't belong to the legislature. It doesn't even belong to Capitol Square, really. It belongs to the people of Ohio. And I hope that every generation that enters this building will be as inspired and motivated as I was when I arrived here in 1954. As a member of the YMCA Youth in Government program,
yeah. Wow.
And passed legislation. Wasn't much legislation then, and we never passed a $60 million capital project during that. But I was inspired by the building and by Frank Lausche speaking over the Neil House at a dinner to think about state government. I believe that this is a building that welcomes people even more today than it did for me back in 1954, or that it did for us as legislators when we first came here and we found it a kind of grungy place. And I hope that we can sustain that for the next 100 years.
As Charlie Moses makes his way to the lectern to give us our charge for the rest of the evening, please join me in thanking these gentlemen for
all of their contributions.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're done. That's it. That was terrific. Thank you all so much for being here and doing this. We've got another 45 minutes to an hour. Please help yourself to food and drink and more fellowship. Thanks for being here.